Data sovereignty has three dimensions: data residency, access to data, and stewardship of data. Besides deciding where to store data, it is essential to determine who can have access to it, which becomes more crucial as we consider access to cloud data across national borders, as well as using the data required for example, training purposes of AI models. Furthermore, less than a quarter of the organizations involved in a recent survey actually have complete knowledge of where their data is stored today, and less than a third actually have the complete control of the other encryption keys for the encryption of their data, in the cloud in particular. The deeper we get into a data-dependent ecosystem, the more complex the issues of data sovereignty, access, and security become. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talos Security Sessions podcast. The facts that I just read prior to our theme music are quotes from my guests on this episode, and I would like to introduce and welcome them both. Agnieszka Bruyère is the VP of Cloud Growth and Public Sector at Oracle EMEA. Agnieszka, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
And Sebastien Cano is SVP of Cloud Protection and Licensing Business Line at Talos. Sebastien, welcome as well.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Pretty much anyone you ask in the cybersecurity space or in data management or in cloud technology will agree that the threat level for data continues to rise. So given how much we continue to rely on data for everything that we do, what do you see as the main reasons for this increase in the threat level? Agnieszka, may I start with you?
Yeah, so very interesting question. So of course, apart from the general statement saying that the threat level is keep on growing, I think that what we can add is, of course, the new usage and cloud, AI, and other technology, of course. But also, I would like to point on geopolitical situation that evolved dramatically these last years. We are seeing more and more cyber adversary which are motivated by political reasons. So, of course, the attack types do not really change, but the level of threats and sophistication of the threats and the type of actors which are targeted is becoming more and more broad and more dangerous, basically.
In an effort to maintain some degree of control and protection over the vast amounts of data that each country has to handle, the practice of data sovereignty has been established in many countries, and of course we have seen and discussed this in earlier episodes of this podcast series, but nothing is cut and dried in this business. So from where you stand, what are your observations on the role of data sovereignty in helping with security while also ensuring that commerce and progress can continue?
Data sovereignty is certainly key on different aspects, one of them being in the perspective of the increasing number of attacks that Agnieszka just mentioned, right? Not only, I would say, the sophistication of the attacks, but also the intensity of the attacks, right? Some attacks being automated and therefore increasing exponentially in numbers. Sovereignty in particular, can provide some assurance on this. It solves also, it's supposed to address a bigger constraint, right, which is on another front for many organizations, not so much about what attacks are actually coming from the outside, but also the regulatory constraints or landscape that is becoming more and more complex, in particular for companies doing business in multiple countries or regions, right? We've seen the trend for multiple years. I cannot even keep count of the number of regulations that a multinational company has to comply with, right? Either regional regulations or industry-specific regulations. And obviously, in particular, as companies move to the cloud, data respect no boundaries, right? And that's where sovereignty plays a role. To me, sovereignty at the end of the day is just a subset of security at large, right? And you mentioned it in your question, right? Having control, remaining in control of your data is probably front and center to solve both problems, right? The security problems from the outside world and the bad guys attacking some of our most valuable assets, and also solving regulation challenges, right? in particular in the wake of the massive migration to cloud computing, right? And the large adoption of software as a service. The average enterprise uses hundreds of software as a service applications and is greatly exposed to workloads running in the cloud. And well, we have some actual data on the subject because we run every year a survey that you may have heard of, is quite known in the industry, called the Data Threat Report, where we actually ask IT managers. So we interview more than 3,000 IT managers in multiple countries and multiple industry segments, and we ask them what are their biggest concerns, right, in terms of security. And well, first question directly tied to your question, to your first point, we found out that 83% of the companies we interviewed are concerned by the fact that sovereignty and privacy laws are impacting their cloud plans. So it means basically any company having the intention to massively adopt cloud, well, has to take into consideration this sovereignty concern, the impact on privacy laws, and how actually this restricts their plans is very real.
Given that there are many companies involved in the life of any cloud platform, this brings up the very real need for encryption of data as a central pillar of cyber resilience and, by extension, data sovereignty. What are your thoughts on this, Agnieszka?
I think that while compliance is such an important subject, as you mentioned, Sebastian, right, for the decision makers, the cyber resilience seems to me the highest priority. And when you are looking at the big economic risk for the economy, so of course you have the climate, you have all the geopolitical situation, but you have cyber as a major, major risk. So I think it's very important when we are approaching sovereignty to keep as the highest standards in terms of cyber resilience. And sovereignty should not be a compromise, actually, to benefit from the best in terms of cyber resilience. So this is my first comment, because it's a bigger, most impactful risk we are observing, at least now, and confirmed by the Economic Forum. The second is, Sebastian, you mentioned using the cloud. It's a huge advantage for the companies, right, to get that innovation for the clients, for the optimization of the operation, to get basically all the performance and flexibility that every company would like to have. But of course, the data is spread in such a situation, right? So I think that what we can offer in terms of technology today, especially encryption outside of cloud, is getting exactly what you are pointing to, leveraging the cloud capabilities and all the benefits, including innovation, while protecting the data with the encryption, preferably controlled by the third party outside of the cloud, to make sure that the client, the end client, is actually keeping the full control of this, relying on the third party to actually ensure the security of the data.
Yeah, I absolutely subscribe to that. Actually, we at Thales have spent a lot of time and energy actually working with you guys, Oracle, and other cloud service providers to enable an external key source, encryption key, to be used to run encryption in the cloud, right? Encryption is applied in a very efficient way by cloud service providers. And when we are back to the concept of control you mentioned, this is where it plays a very big role, right? Remaining in control of the encryption keys for corporations is certainly front and center in solving many of the problems we discussed in the past 10 minutes, right? The security part, right? You have a better control as an organization when you know for sure that you allow access to your data, and obviously the sovereignty question. So yeah, I subscribe to what you said 100%. We promote that message across the entire industry every time we can. Remaining in control of your encryption keys on-prem, in the cloud, in hybrid environments is not only important, but now it's possible with the latest developments and improvements that have been done by cloud service providers with concepts like HYOK, hold your own key, for instance. Enterprises, organizations moving to the cloud have the ability to ensure that every time an operation is performed on their data in the cloud, they will have to provide the authorization for it. The cloud service provider, before performing an operation, an encryption or decryption operation, will have to get access granted by the owner of the data. And we are working on other technologies more advanced, like confidential computing, to actually enable a complete segregation between the access of the cloud service provider and its employees and the actual data that they host and operate on behalf of organizations.
Confidential computing, as being the protection of data while in use, which is a perfect complement to storage and network encryption, obviously, which protect data at rest and data in transit, respectively.
It's exactly the solution that Sebastian just mentioned that are solving completely the issue, because basically if the external jurisdiction is asking for data, when that any kind of operator, whoever, cannot access the data, or simply data, I mean, they can access to this, but it's completely encrypted. It's simply impossible. It's simply impossible as soon as the key are managed fully externally, is controlled by the third party, Thales in this case. This is exactly the way it prevents for having the operator any access to the data. And of course, it's enhanced because this new technology like confidential computing. Usually when we are talking about the data, we were always talking about the data in fly or stored data, right? With confidential computing, we are talking about the data in use. So actually the data is, which is decrypted, to be processed in an immediate memory, right? So the confidential computing is really adding to the full chain of data treatment that not only treats the data at state, the data in flight, but also the data in use. So definitely a great use case to have the full chain, full value chain for the data being covered and protected.
Just to emphasize on what Agnieszka just said, well, I believe this kind of podcast today are very helpful is to actually help alert professionals, IT professionals, and the importance of these questions, right? Again, when I go back to the survey we run every year with thousands of executives, we find out that less than a quarter of the organizations we surveyed actually have a complete knowledge of where their data is stored today. I want to let that sink in, right? It means more than 75% of corporations, they don't know where all their data is, right? That's, I mean, it's very, very impressive to me to see such a data. And less than a third actually have complete control of their encryption keys for the encryption of their data in the cloud in particular. So there's a long way to go, right? As we have said for the past few minutes, I mean, the technology is available. It's out there, supported by a larger cloud service providers like Oracle and others. So it's really a matter of applying the right rules and processes and making sure organizations regain some control over their most sensitive data.
Yeah. And Sebastian, what I would like to add, but because usually what I'm hearing from the clients, it's always the concern about, yes, encryption, great, but how it will impact my IT performance, database performance, applying the encryption. So usually, even if we have the right level of awareness, there is this kind of concern about how it will impact my IT performance, response time, etc., etc. And I think that now, Sebastian, we can say with all the advanced technology we are having and evolving technology, we can feel comfortable about saying that there is no impact on the database performance while applying the encryption. This is really something absolutely key, because of course security is the highest objective, but then of course if it impacts IT operations, there might be some people who are reluctant to apply it. So I think that addressing the CTO and senior technical person, then they can test and experience today that there is no impact in terms of performance then from the IT operation perspective.
One of the products we promote for encryption is actually called transparent encryption, and for a reason.
Exactly.
So totally echo what you say, yeah.
That's an interesting position, that on one hand we pursue these processes like encryption and confidential computing to help ensure cyber resilience and data sovereignty, but at the same point there's that classic concern that it might impact operations. It sounds kind of like a bigger version of what MFA and passwords do for individual people. The security factor pushes up against the convenience factor. So is there a comfortable middle ground?
We've got this discussion even recently. Should we encrypt anything with external keys, with confidential computing, and then we will be safe everywhere, right? I think still that the balanced approach is the best. Sebastian mentioned about the awareness where data is stored, but it's also awareness what data is really matters, which is important, how it will impact the business if the data is stolen, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that a graduated approach in terms of security and data protection measures is important, and really leveraging the best technology for the most critical, sensitive data, it's key in terms of encryption, confidential computing, et cetera, et cetera. Because, of course, in some spaces, we will still use the encryption. Maybe we will not use, Sebastian, for example, external one, because we just need a kind of standard encryption. It's still available in cloud. It's cloud provider do have the access, but maybe some data are good enough to have and profit only from this type of encryption. So I think that the graduate approach in terms of security related to data classification is the right thing to do, to have the best measure at the level of importance and sensitivity of the data.
Definitely. Not all data is created equal, and different type of data deserve certainly different type of control and security measures.
And also what I want to add, because we have this very popular statement about zero trust approach, right? It's nothing new, basically, right? Because it's the set of security measures to actually make the best approach in terms of cybersecurity and protection, right? So simply data security and protection around data security, encryption, confidential computing and others are basically one of the building blocks of this full view of zero trust approach, right? And then building on this to make sure that the full chain is fully secured.
Looking into the future then, when it comes to data sovereignty, how do you see things evolving?
As I said earlier, I see sovereignty as a subset of a bigger question, which is remaining in control of your data, knowing where your data is located, how it's being protected, and who has access to it. Encryption is a pillar of this question, right? It's not the only solution you can rely on, right? Unfortunately, encryption relies on, obviously, authenticating the right users and providing the proper rights for users to access encrypted data, protected data. And we know that today, the vast majority of data breaches, in particular, are driven by identities being compromised, right? So keeping your identity safe is another pillar, right? Making sure the user who has access to encrypted data is legitimate and has the proper rights and permissions to do that. If identities are compromised, obviously you can encrypt all you want, data will be compromised. And so that's another area. And it's obviously a large segment with a lot of players in this industry. And I think most large corporations today have implemented and enforced multi-factor authentication and good practices in terms of securing identities of users and protecting identities of users. The one area where we are probably investing the most nowadays, which is to me the last frontier, is more on the concept of monitoring the data and getting visibility, improving the visibility of organizations over the data, making sure that corporations not only know where their data is, corporations not only know that they have the right processes in place to protect the data, but they also have visibility of how data is being accessed and used, right? This is, to me, the last line of defense, basically, right? After you've properly identified users, you've properly protected your data, encrypted your data in the cloud, on-prem, in hybrid infrastructures, you need to keep an eye on it. And you probably have cameras at your house or an alarm system. You want to have similar type of visibility, but focused on the data and the usage of the data. So if all other lines of defenses have been compromised, you can identify a breach happening, you can identify usage that doesn't follow traditional patterns, and you can act on it, raise a flag, and potentially have a look at what's happening. That's, again, to me, the last line of defense. It's a more complex objective, obviously. And as I said, we're investing heavily to solve that particular problem, which to me, as I said, is the last frontier.
Of course, Sebastian, it's very right about the overall approach and holistic approach with the highest level of defense for the future. So I think that data sovereignty is a subset to digital sovereignty, which is a broader subject, right? So I just want to highlight that when we are talking about data sovereignty, it's a kind of zoom on data. There is a broader discussion that we won't address here about the digital sovereignty per se. I want to highlight AI. all the AI use cases are using data actually, right? And some of the data are public data, so it's perfectly okay. There are some other risk related, but they are not cyber or control risk to the public data used by AI. But then I want to focus from data security perspective about sensitive data, personal data, critical information being used by AI use cases, right? So it's a new dimension. It's a completely new dimension because actually we do not use just the data to do the normal operations of the company, but actually to get some insight, to make some decision process, etc., etc. So I think this is a new thing that appeared this last year, 2 years. It's really about the data security in the context of using AI, generative AI, large language model, etc. So it's a new challenge. So I think that a lot of things will be happening around this space moving forward when this becoming more and more popular and having so many organization, public organization, but also private, try to leverage the benefits from AI. So this is one thing that I think that data sovereignty will take even more importance in this context.
AI is the current elephant in the room, and I'm sure that the majority of people, IT security specialists excepted, of course, are waking up to the fact that this particular elephant actually eats data. That is its LLM diet. So if that were not enough, there is an even bigger elephant waiting just down the road that makes AI small by comparison in terms of protection of data, and I'm talking, of course, about post-quantum cryptography. Now, on our previous episode, we had a great chat with Dr. Michele Mosca and Dr. Taher Elgamal, along with Blair Canavan from Talos, on the scale of the changes and threats that quantum computing might pose to the security of data. And there is a lot of fear that in the near future, the existing encryption algorithms can be easily broken, thanks to the power of quantum. This is, or should be, definitely top of mind for every CTO and CISO. So maybe, Sebastian, perhaps I can ask you to comment on this as your team is working on this very intensively. What is the future around post-quantum cryptography?
On quantum computing, I think the industry is getting, I would say, more structured and these things are falling in place, right? So you probably have seen over the summer, I think, NIST approving and releasing their first quantum resistant algorithm. So this is something that is certainly going to help make progress. We now know, we security companies, what to work with and how to prepare for a post-quantum world. And for those who think like quantum computing is science fiction, obviously you need to keep in mind this very real threat of harvest now, decrypt later type of attacks, right? Which are already underway in front of our eyes, right? So we see bad actors already harvesting, collecting very large amounts of data, some of it being highly sensitive, and they can do nothing with it for the time being, but they obviously hope and rely on progress. And as quantum computing will become more prevalent, they hope they will be able to leverage it to actually access data that was valuable. The question is now, actually, we see some actors, some companies, particularly in highly sensitive segments like in the financial industry, governments, very, very interested by the progress we are making in protecting against potential attacks in a post-quantum world. And as I said, products are coming, the industry is shaping up, and I think this is going to be a big theme, yes, for the years to come with industry experts.
Yeah, and I loved also Sebastian's statement, and we are talking a lot about this harvest now and decrypt later, right? So the threat is already today, right? Even if the impact might be in the future, the threat is present today. So it's important that this is understood and the proper measures are in place or in planning, let's say, to prevent this from happening.
And the solutions exist. That's the most important message here. So there's nothing to really be worried about. Just
be prepared.
Include that in your... if you're an IT manager listening in, well, obviously, put that in your already busy agenda.
Agnieszka, just one question for you, following up on your mention of AI. Sebastian already mentioned the fact that compliance and regulation was coming at such a fast pace that it's difficult to keep up. Do you think that the EU AI Act will help towards reducing risks when it comes to data sovereignty?
I think it's more driven by the fact how we should kind of control AI spreading in the economy, user benefit, using AI, etc., etc. I'm not convinced that from purely data security protection and privacy perspective, it's really fully addressed. It addresses a bigger social aspects of AI and its impact. And it's, of course, very important to do it, absolutely. Now, for us being IT, cloud professionals, etc., we are going a little bit deeper to think about how data security, data privacy is impacted by it. I'm not expecting that a directive from EU, this particular aspect will be addressed. But it's addressed somehow, because it's addressed through GDPR, it's addressed for a lot of things. So it's on us as a professionals to make the connection, right? Between AI use cases that we would like to leverage for organization, company, and how this creation of AI use cases impacts or compromise data security and data privacy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think regulation will solve the security problem or the security challenge posed by AI. The answer will be technical. This will be solved through technology. And I don't think, you know, the solutions to the AI security problem are going to be very different from the solutions that we already have in store in the industry, right? The challenges, where the context in which the products and the technologies available today will be used to secure AI may change a little bit, but the principles and maybe often the tools or the technologies are going to be quite similar. We talked earlier, we mentioned confidential computing, for instance. Well, I think confidential computing is probably a very promising way of securing the execution of large language models in the cloud and leveraging the power of the cloud to do that. And at the same time, keeping these models and the data that feeds it very very secure. So solutions are out there. It's just a matter of applying them in the right way.
Well, I knew this was going to be an engaging conversation, and the breadth and the depth of your expertise and knowledge, both of you, of course, is truly exciting. You have shared so much highly practical wisdom, and it has been such a pleasure meeting you both. So Agnieszka Breuer, VP Cloud Growth and Public Sector at Oracle EMEA, thank you so much for being here today.
It was great to have you on this podcast today, and it's a great pleasure to talk to you, Steve and Sebastian.
And Sebastian Cano, SVP at Cloud Protection and Licensing Business Line at Thales, thank you as well.
Thanks for giving me an opportunity to join this podcast today. Very interesting conversation. And Agnieszka, I feel like we've done this before together, because we think very much alike on many topics. So thanks for being a great inspiring partner.
Thanks, Sebastian.
Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Thales Security Sessions podcast, and join in the conversation on LinkedIn. Just search for Thales Cloud Security and watch for our podcast posts. We will be back again soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.